Hello, everyone. I'm Billy.
And I'm Kamran. Welcome to the Horse Frog Podcast, home of your two favorite professional digressors and the creators of the Malazan Brotherhood.
Today, we will be discussing Book 4, Chapter 15 of Deadhouse Gates, a novel in the Malazan Books of the Fallen. This is part 3 of our coverage of this chapter.
This podcast series is intended to be a companion to reading or listening to the books set in the Malazan universe. It's not a book review, and it is most definitely not intended to be a replacement to reading the books. Both Billy and I know this to be the best fantasy story ever written and want to share our love of the series with you.
We will be covering the events of the books in a linear fashion. There will be spoilers for those that have not read the books. We'll try not to spoil anything prior to us covering that portion of that respective book, but that ship's already sailed. I dropped a minor spoiler, not like accidentally revealing who shot JR, just kind of a minor spoiler. Just minorly, sorry. So do we need an OSHA-type signage in Horse Frog Towers? Like X amount of days without incident for like me in particular.
We need it has been X number of episodes since Billy has had to be censored due to a slip up.
Okay,
and today we are at zero because I had to beep you last week.
Oh, did you beep you? Okay, right on.
No, I had to beep you.
Oh, yeah. Oh, what was last week's? Okay, that's right. Oh, yeah. A name drop.
Yes, that's correct.
I remember what you said. Okay.
A quick warning. Today's episode contains descriptions of past violence. Listener discretion is advised.
Our show is listener supported, and if you'd like to support us, we would really appreciate that. You can do so by visiting our Patreon link on our website at horsefrogproductions.com. Currently, we are posting ad-free episodes on Patreon weekly.
Also, we'd really like to hear from you. Send any feedback or comments to contact@horsefrogproductions.com. All right. Couple of things to address before we get into the episode today.
Okay.
It took Billy and I about 5 tries to get through this episode intro because I thought immediately right when we started recording that it would be a good idea to mention that I hadn't watched Broken Arrow, but I didn't say Broken Arrow. I just said I hadn't watched a movie. And then Billy's like, wait, we were supposed to watch something. And then I said, just save it for when we're recording. And then we couldn't stop laughing for 5 tries at this intro. So neither one of us have watched Broken Arrow. I know we talked about it last week. We're going to try to rewatch it and see if it still stood up. And then also how the rope-a-dope was presented. I did try and look up some clips of that. I think he described it correctly. He was talking about Foreman and Ollie. And I think it was Foreman and Ollie.
Yeah, that's what I'm under the impression of is Foreman and Ollie. Yeah.
Okay. Either way, neither one of us have watched it yet. So we'll come back on that. Second thing. I mentioned that when the word cyclopean came up last week, it reminded me of Austin Powers, but the exact word is cycloptic. He said my cycloptic colleague, not my cyclopean colleague. So that was a mistake on my part. It's been a while since I watched Austin Powers, but I remembered it afterwards.
Right on.
We try to keep things straight here.
Yeah. Yes, we do.
All right. Chapter 15, part 3. We go to Fiddler and Company. The ancient island rose in a flat-topped hump above the cracked clay plain. Gray, weathered stumps marked mooring poles and more substantial piers just beyond what had once been the shoreline, along with remnants of the usual garbage that had once been dumped over the sides of ships. Sinkholes in what had been the bay's muddy bottom glittered with compacted layers of glittering fish scale. Crouching beside Fiddler, Mappo watched as Ikaria made his way up the crumbled remains of a seawall. Crocus stood just behind Mappo, near the hobbled horses. The lad had fallen strangely silent since their last meal stop, a certain economy coming to his movements, as if he had chained himself to his own vow of patience. And seemingly unconsciously, Crocus had begun to emulate Ikarium in his speech and mannerisms. Mappo was neither amused nor displeased when he noticed. Ikarium had always been an overwhelming presence, all the more so because he made no affectation or pretense. Mappo thought, still, better for Crocus had he looked to Fiddler. This soldier's a wonder in his own right. Fiddler said, Ikarium climbs like he knows where he's going. Mappo winced. He said, I had come to the same observation. Fiddler asked, have you two been here before? Mappo said, I have not, Fiddler. But Ikarium, well, he's wandered this land before. Fiddler said, but in returning to a place he'd been to before, how would he know? Mappo shook his head. He thought, he shouldn't. He never has before. Are those blessed barriers breaking down? Queen of dreams, return Ikarium to the bliss of not knowing. I beg you. Fiddler slowly stood up and said, let us join him. Mappo said, I'd rather. Fiddler interrupted, as you wish, and set off after Ikarium, who had vanished into the city ruins beyond the seawall. After a moment, Crocus strode past Mappo as well. Mappo grimaced. He thought, I must be getting old, to let being distraught cow me so. He sighed, rising from his crouch and lumbering after the others. Halfway up the slope of detritus, at the base of the seawall, Fiddler grunted and paused, reaching down to pull free a shaft of gray wood. He said, I've some rethinking to do. All this wood's turned to stone. Crocus said, petrified. My uncle described the process to me once. The wood soaks up minerals, but that's supposed to take tens of thousands of years. Fiddler said, well, a high mage of the Driswarren could manage the same in the blink of an eye, lad. The Driswarren is also called the Path of Stone, or the Path of the Earth. It's been a while since that particular warren's been mentioned.
Last book, right? Since we've really mentioned it. We might have mentioned it in passing somewhere here, but if it was so casual it didn't register. But yeah, wasn't Mammoth, Crocus's uncle, a high priest? Or is that the other old fellow that runs the town, Baruch?
A priest of Driss.
Drek.
Somebody was mentioned as Driss. I think it was Mammoth.
Yeah, something like that.
But then they were also worried about Drek getting possessed by Mammoth. And it was also mentioned that the followers of Drek were always kind of sour. If you remember, yeah. They were talking about reading the writings of Drek. I think it was Amanda Rake talking about it.
Yeah, being real morose. Mm-hmm. Because they had a real bad outlook on life. Everything winds up in the rot, you know, I guess, in the worm. Mm-hmm.
This picture of this city coming up out of, not a lake bed, but like an ancient seabed that they're climbing out of, it kind of evokes the imagery of in Israel where they built those castles during the crusade on top of, I guess it would be a tell or some type of mesa. Yes. You know those castles I'm talking about? Yes. At least one in particular. The drop-off would be pretty steep here, I imagine. And with all this trash and everything, it's an interesting picture to envision.
Yeah, it is. His world is always so... I think it's the most intensely built land I've ever read as far as, you know, fantasy worlds. Mm-hmm.
Mapple pulled free a fragment of pottery. A pot shirt.
I was going to say a pot shirt, did you? Nice.
Not much thicker than an eggshell. The shard was sky blue in color and very hard. It revealed the torso of a figure painted on the surface, black with a green outline. The image was stiff, stylized, but without doubt human. He let the shard drop. There it is. Yep. Oh. Fiddler said, this city was dead long before the sea dried up, and resumed his climb. Crocus called up after him. How do you know?
I'm so sorry. I have to interrupt here. Do you think there's a warren of potsherds? Oh,
they've created so many potsherds in this universe that they came to critical mass and had a singularity.
Oh, it came to awareness in some strange fashion and formed its own warren, I guess. I don't know. I'm just questioning. Sorry.
What would the god of potsherds look like?
I don't know. It's got to be better than the god of boat repairs. I don't know. Yeah. Boat repairs, I can understand. But it's like, I don't know what they would look like either. Okay. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
Yeah, we'll have to put some thought into that.
Yeah, we most surely will.
Fiddler said in response to Crocus, because everything's water-worn, lad. Waves crumbled this seawall, century after century of waves. I grew up in a port city, remember. I've seen what water can do. The Emperor had Malaz Bay dredged before the Imperial piers were built, revealed old seawalls and the like, showed everyone that Malaz City's older than anybody'd realized. Mappo said, and that the sea levels have risen since. Fiddler said, aye. At the top of the seawall, the city stretched out before them. While the remains were weathered, it was clear that the city had been deliberately destroyed. Every building had been reduced to rubble, revealing a cataclysmic use of force and fury. Scrub brush filled every open space that remained, and low, gnarled trees clung to foundation stones and surmounted the mounds of wreckage. Statuary had been a primary feature of the architecture, lining the broad colonnades and set in niches in every building wall. Marble body parts lay everywhere, each displaying the rigid style that Mappo had seen on the potsherd. Mappo began to sense a... Do we need a...
I just said nice is all I said.
I thought you said potsherd.
Oh, my word. No, I'm not giving it the reverence.
Okay.
To decimal. It's almost that reverence because it's so... Is the term ubiquitous correct?
Yes. Yes.
It is so ubiquitous in this land that it just has become its own joke, in particular this episode. So I like that. Sorry.
Mappo began to sense a familiarity with the assortment of human figures portrayed. He thought, a legend told on the Jag Odon, a tale told by the elders in my tribe. Ikariam was nowhere to be seen. Fiddler asked, now where? A frail keening rising in his head, bringing sweat to his dark skin, Mappo stepped forward. Fiddler said, caught a scent of something, have you? Mappo barely heard Fiddler's question. The city's pattern was hard to distinguish from what remained, yet Mappo followed his own mental map, born of his memory of the legend, its cadence, its precise metering when recounted in the harsh, clashing dialect of archaic Trell. The tribe Mappo had adopted all those centuries ago had chosen to return to the old ways, rejecting the changes that were afflicting the Trell. The elders had shown Mappo and the others all that was in danger of being lost, the power that resided in the telling of tales, the ritual unscrolling of memory. This reminds me of what you were talking about previously, that there were, was it rabbis that could cite the Old Testament completely from memory?
Yeah. The rabbis, and I guess probably several of those famous scribes could probably do it as well. But yeah, the way the language is structured in particular, it's just full of mnemonic tricks and hooks, apparently. And this really enables you to learn it. And it, I mean, yeah, get me, that's still difficult, but I've heard Bill Maher, I heard him on an interview the other day, a lot of people make bad assumptions about the ancient peoples and think that just because they were ancient, they weren't savvy or smart because maybe they weren't writers or they were more oral based. It's like, no, that's not a real smart thing to assume. I'm assuming these people were quite smart, especially smart enough to make things where you could memorize it out of the memory usage of your own. I mean, that blows me away. That's a lot to memorize.
Yeah. Think about the people that originally came to the conclusion that the stars are celestial bodies and there are things orbiting other things. And somehow coming to the conclusion that they could calculate where things are and start to track time. And these are not dumb people that are coming up with these concepts.
Yeah. And what a lot of folks forget this, or we were taught this as kids in school, that when they really taught history, that the Egyptians, the ancient Egyptians, several thousand BC knew the distance from here to the sun.
That's impressive.
I mean, dude, how do you know that stuff? I mean, that just doesn't just happen. I mean, that's like some major intellect at work there, working with limited resources. It's kind of what it is, I think, a lot of it. Got these Lex Luthor type personalities. They can't pull it off with the technology at hand.
Yeah, it's really just a couple of really special minds that can drive humanity forward. I think it was in the Lex interview with Jeff Bezos recently, they were talking about why Jeff Bezos thinks it's important to have humanity expand beyond planet Earth. And one of the things he mentioned was the more people you have, the more chances you have of having these genius level intellectual people pop up that can positively impact society.
Yeah, I agree. I've always been a fan of colonization of other planets, man. Heck, go to the moon. Let's do that first.
Yeah, that's a good starting point.
Yeah, I've always wanted to. What a great base, because think of how easier it would be to launch deeper stuff from the moon because of the low gravity, incredibly low gravity. Dude, it'd be a lot easier to work with on certain aspects.
Yeah. That moon dust is really difficult to deal with, though.
Oh, I forget about that. I'm so sorry. I forget about that.
You're going to have challenges no matter where you go.
Yeah, that's true.
But I, being younger, thought it was just like sand, but apparently is much more difficult to deal with. I think we were at the museum or something, and they were talking about when they went to the moon in the 60s, they had tons of problems with their equipment with this dust.
Okay.
And the suits were having trouble with it and all the joints and everything.
Oh, wow.
So they're starting to develop different ways to make the dust not get into the suit. They're using like static charge and various other mechanisms to try to prevent it from getting in everything.
Wow.
Yeah. Then it gets inside whatever habitat that they have there, and filtering that out is going to be a problem, keeping everything clean. Yeah. And they have sensitive
equipment. That's true. Yeah. I didn't even think about that.
But I still agree that it's definitely a good starting point.
Yeah. I dig it. I like the idea. Make it so. Sorry. It goes to my head, folks. It goes to my head sometimes.
All right, moving along. Mappo knew where Ikariam had gone. He knew what Ikariam would find. his heart thundering savagely in his chest, his pace increased as he scrambled over the rubble, pushing through thickets of thorn which lacerated even his tough hide. He thought, seven main avenues within each city of the First Empire. The sky spirits looked down upon the holy number. Seven scorpion tails, seven stings facing the circle of sand. To all who would make offerings to the seven holies, look to the circle of sand. Fiddler called out somewhere behind him, but Mappo did not respond. He'd found one of the curving avenues and was making for the center. The seven scorpion sting thrones had once towered over the enclosure, each 70 arm spans high. That's seven statues hundreds of feet high.
Yeah.
The scale of the constructs that this civilization was capable of coming up with are amazing.
Yeah.
You had these laser straight roads with aqueducts beneath them, a huge civilization spanning multiple cities. And then the amount of statues that are there, generally, there's some measure of wealth involved in creating that kind of stuff.
Yes, there is. I'm so sorry. I just had a great image. And it was a mashup of two genres all of a sudden. I'm so sorry. All of a sudden, we need to – Charlton Heston needs to roll up off screen. And there needs to be like the Statue of Liberty sticking partially out of the sand over there. You maniacs. Sorry. Okay. But yes, this most assuredly needs to be on screen.
So that's a Planet of the Apes reference, right? For those that haven't seen it.
Yes. Original Planet of the Apes. Okay. But, you know, I also think about Lord of the Rings when they were, you know, the first Lord of the Rings, when they're on the river, you know, when things are still kind of cool before.
Oh, they have those huge statues.
Yes. It's very, you know, but out in the desert though, these giant statues like that, that stuff is really, I would love to see. We're dying, dude. I'm dying to see this on the screen, man.
Each of the thrones had been shattered by sword blows, by an unbreakable weapon in hands powered by a rage almost impossible to comprehend. Little remained of the offerings and tributes that had once crowded the circle of sand, with one exception, before which Ikariam now stood. He was motionless, his head tilted upward to take in the immense construction that rose before him. Its iron gears showed no rust, no corrosion, and would still be moving in a measure that could not be seen by mortal eyes. The enormous disc that dominated the structure stood at an angle, its marble face smothered with etched symbols. It faced the sun, though that fiery orb was barely visible through the sky's golden haze. Mappo slowly walked toward Ikariam and stopped two paces behind him. Ikariam sensed Mappo's presence and said, "How can this be, friend?" It was the voice of a lost child, and it twisted like a barbed shaft in Mappo's heart. Ikariam continued, "This is mine, you see. My gift, or so I can read in this ancient Omtos script. More I have marked with knowing its season, its year of construction, and see how the disc has turned, so that I may see the Omtos correspondence for this year, allowing me to calculate." His voice fell away. Mappo hugged himself, unable to speak, unable even to think. Anguish and fear filled him until he too felt like a child, come face to face with a nightmare. After a long moment, Ikariam said, "Tell me, Mappo, why did the destroyers of this city not destroy this as well? True, sorcery invested it, made it immune to time's own ravages. But so too were these seven thrones. So too were many other gifts in this circle. All things made can be broken, after all. Why, Mappo?" Mappo prayed his friend would not turn around, would not reveal his face, his eyes. He thought, the child's worst fears, the nightmare's face, a mother, a father, all love stripped away, replaced by cold intent or blind disregard, the simple lack of caring, and so the child wakens, shrieking. "Do not turn, Ikariam. I cannot bear to see your face." Ikariam said, "Perhaps I made an error." Mappo heard Fiddler and Crocus arrive on the sand behind him. Something in the air held them to silence, stalled their approach. Ikariam continued, "A mistake in the measurement, a slip of the script. It's an old language, Omtos, faint in my memory. Perhaps as faint back then, when I first built this. The knowledge I seem to retain feels precise, yet I am not perfect, am I? My certainty could be a self-delusion." Mappo thought, "No, Ikariam, you are not perfect." Ikariam said, "I calculate that 94,000 years have passed since I last stood here, Mappo. 94,000. There must be some error in that. No city ruin could survive that long, could it? Wow. That is a long time. And I suppose it would have to be for an inland sea to recede to the degree that this one has.
Yeah. Again, I'm always blown away by his vast spans of time here in Erikson's world. That's just amazing. And the fact that I'm just always so curious. Ikariam is just such an – he's always an enigma to me. There's not much answers to him, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, this is not saying anything, I don't believe. It's just there's – he's such an enigma to himself and all these things he does. It's like, what does he do? But he makes these machines. It's like, what is he doing? Where does this time – why can't he remember things? What's going on?
Mm-hmm.
So that's a big question.
Yeah, we're just now beginning to get some insight into it.
Yeah, because I think back to the machine that was mentioned in Guardians of the Moon. You know, that's one of the Ikariums, because that's where we first heard their name mentioned. Because remember, I forget who was talking about it, but it's in Guardians. It's mentioned because they got that machine there. That's where they got all the Year of the Tusks and all that other stuff. But that was from a gift from Ikarium. No one just knew he was still alive.
I think it was Anamander Rake was talking to Baruch.
Yeah, that's probably what it was, because he would know. Is Ikariam a youngster compared to Anamander Rake? And that's a valid question, by the way.
I think that Anamander Rake might be older, but they're both ancient in the grand scheme of things.
Yes, but I'm thinking Anamander is a significant chunk older, I'm thinking.
Yeah, darkness was before everything, I think.
Right. Yeah. Oh, that's true. So yes, he would predate everybody. They were the first. So we think.
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah, we need to read the Carcanus trilogy whenever the third book's published.
Right. I'm just dying for the rest of this other, the Witness trilogy. That's killing me, because that was such, the first one was so good.
You're going to be so waiting good. For a while.
I know it. Sucking. Sucking wind.
I think the second one's supposed to be done soon.
Yeah, I think he is of the mind to finish this trilogy in about 3 years' time in total. I think he's trying to do a year. So or year and a half between, but it's coming pretty good. So I'm excited for book two. I'll read it when it comes out. I can't wait.
Yeah, I haven't read it yet. I'm not going to put myself through the torture of waiting for the third one to come out after reading the first two.
I get it.
Can't do it.
I got it. So that means you wait for the show to be over completely before you watch it. Like once all seasons are over.
I'll consume a season at a time.
See, I can do that.
I won't wait for an entire show to go by.
I can't do that either. I'm like you. I can do a season at a time. I have to wait for it to be off the air so I can skip the commercials or have it on streaming like I want it. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, I can, but I can't. I don't think I could wait for the whole show. Yeah.
For season two of Reacher, though, I couldn't wait. I just had to watch them as they came out.
Oh, yeah. I think that's the first thing. KP and I did the same thing. We had to do the same. That was such a good show. It's worthy of going back and watching season one and two again. It's so stinking good. She's probably be down for that any moment.
Yeah.
She loves that guy. She's like, that guy's some eye candy. And he is some eye candy.
You know, for how masculine he looks in that, you know, what's interesting is he has a background in dancing.
Yes.
That's how he met his wife.
Up too much for that. Yeah. And he's actually a real pretty hardcore Christian, apparently. He's been given a lot of guff for doing this show. Yeah,
he's pretty religious. Mappo found himself shrugging. He thought, how could we know one way or the other? And this was in response to Ikariam asking how a city could last this long without getting worn down by erosion. Ikariam said, the investiture of sorcery, perhaps. Mappo thought, perhaps. Ikariam said, who destroyed this city, I wonder? Mappo thought, you did, Ikariam. Yet even in your rage, a part of you recognized what you yourself had built and left it intact. So this is what we've been dancing around for the entire book.
Yes.
The reason Mappo follows Ikariam everywhere is to prevent something like this from happening.
Wow. Wow. That's just mind-blowing.
The power levels are very difficult for me to comprehend here.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine the power contained within him to destroy an entire city single-handedly with sword blows. It's a whole nother level because it feels different than something that Anamander Rake would do with the sorcerous waves that he uses when he unleashes his warren. This feels different.
Yeah. I can't comprehend it. Is it like the Hulk showing up on a bad hair day and just absolutely losing his mind, killing and smashing everything in his path? Or is this like a slow burn? Fighting with this sword, using sorcery to nuke and melt. I think it's more like the first because it seems so chaotic. It just sounds like a guy who's out of his mind. If, like you mentioned, Rake, if it was Rake, I'd see Rake is systematic. You know, I could see if he was going to take care of a city, I think he's probably got plans before he hits that city, you know, and he just goes in and does what he does. Mm-hmm. And when he was in that business, he doesn't seem to be in that business right now. But does that sound what you're thinking, like his rake is more systematic than this?
Absolutely. This mindless rage is something that's always left a very large impression on me. The ability to let your emotions take so much control over you that you completely lose your mind and who you are. Yeah. And just are a conduit for destruction, basically.
You know, this begs an interesting question for me. I've just now thought about something odd. I said, what if this is like, because it's so almost childlike in some cases. Is he young, even though he's over 94,000 years old?
You mean like his mind is kind of frozen and not able to progress?
Well, not just that, but I mean, like, is he like in some kind of metamorphosis stage? Is he going to come out as something even like wilder? You know, is this some kind of weird stage? Are the barriers self-inflicted? Is this, you know, that Mappo mentions, are they inflicted by something? You know, what it, you know, I don't know if we'll ever get an answer to that, but I can't imagine this single-handedly just blowing. I'm like, it's with his sword. I'm not laughing at it. I'm laughing uncomfortably because it's like, I don't know what else to do. It's like, how would you go about doing this? I got no idea.
What we do know about Jag Hut so far is they use Omtos Falak, which is ice, and they don't have this type of reaction. When they use their sorcery, they don't have this similar type of output. What I don't understand is, we know he's half-blooded. What is the other half? And what was it about that pairing that changed how he uses his Warren in a way that manifests like this?
Good questions. That's a daggum good question. Okay. I am curious about his mama.
Yeah, I'd like to know more.
Yeah.
One final note on this, the buildup to ultimately coming to this point, it's been long, almost the whole book. Mappo's been tormented. We've seen the uncomfortable conversations that they've had. But in particular, when we're coming to the climax of the reveal here of what's going on, why Mappo feels this way, it was really done in a fashion that it feels like it was metered out perfectly.
Oh, yes.
And it just came together just the way you'd want to see it.
And, you know, and I can say this having read this a few times, that this still doesn't lose its impact on me. I still feel for Ikariam. He is a very sympathetic character. He's trying to find out who he is. And it's just like, well, I've been here about 100,000 years ago, roughly. what was I doing here? Besides dropping off a gift? You know, I don't really know.
The people that he interacts with that are in his party, he always treats them with respect, and he's seemingly very nice.
Yes, very protective of who he's with as well.
We've only had one hint of any semblance of going to this point, and that was when Mappo had to knock him out because he started to go a little bit far when they're fighting one of the Soul Taken or Divers.
Yeah, he was starting to blow. He's just going to blow.
Ikariam said, "They had great power, whoever they were. Talan Imas arrived here, sought to drive the enemy back, an old alliance between the denizens of this city and the Silent Host. Their shattered bones lie buried in the sand beneath us, in their thousands. What force was there that could do such a thing, Mappo? Not Jag Hut. Even in their preeminence, 1,000 millennia passed, and the Kachain Chamal have been extinct for even longer. I do not understand this, friend." Again, thousands of Talan Imas.
Wow.
This kind of goes back to my point. The Talan Imas are able to take down Jag Hut, and Ikariam is alone by himself, yet they can't stop him when he's in this state. It's something that we haven't encountered from the power level perspective, it feels like.
Yeah. No, I guess the question here is, could Ikariam in that state take down any god or ascendant in this reality?
I don't know. Because we don't get to see that magic.
Yeah, we don't.
It feels very powerful.
Yes, it does. He feels out of control, scary, like maybe somebody ought to try and reel him in. I mean, the thousands of the Talan Imas, that's one thing. It's one thing to, okay, I'm going to come in here, you know, okay, sure, I'm powerful. I'm going to knock down a city. You know, just maybe he's on a whim. Maybe he had a great time doing it. I don't know. No judgments. That's Ikariam. That's that world. But these Talanim ass, when they come in for the kill, dude, you usually don't leave. Some of them get killed, but not like thousands of them get killed that we're aware of.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, dude, I think I've glossed over this piece of information a couple times here, the fact that it was thousands of Talanim ass.
It feels like thousands of Talanim ass would be able to take down Anamander Rake in his dragon form.
Mm-hmm.
Now, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he could turn around and let out some crazy breath and sunder 3,000 of them at once or something like that. But I would think that they would be able to take him down eventually.
Oh, yeah. I have when it just kind of talks about, yeah, these guys like to go hunt down Jag Hunt, kind of like, well, you know, well, dude, they like hunting Jag Hunt so much it's become a really way of life or unlife, whatever, for
Nice.
So, I mean, it's like, yeah, I'm sorry. I love this. I'm still wrestling with this. I got no answers. I love that I'm blown away by this still.
Mm-hmm. This is like one of the big revelations.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, it always left a huge impression on me.
And especially this, like you said, this whole book is so masterfully metered this out. It's hinted around the edges of what might be coming. But to this reveal, it's like, dude, if he's done this once, how many other times has he done it? That's another question.
Yeah, and this is only the second book in the series. He'd been writing for a while, but you have to assume that as you gain experience, you do also improve your craft. So, It is interesting to see his progression as an author because this is such a step up from Gardens of the Moon already.
Yeah.
And as we dig into the other ones, you know, it's been several years since I read through the series. I am looking forward to watching that progression more closely to point out the things that I notice.
What's next? Is MOI next? Memories of Ice next?
Yes. Yes.
Oh.
And for a lot of people, that's their favorite.
I'm excited.
Yeah. It's a really good book.
Yeah. I don't know if it's my favorite.
Seven Cities, see, and the Chain of Dogs, you know, it's like, it's kind of
My problem, like I told you, I said, my biggest problem with the series is that because when you turn me onto them, it's already a completed deal. I have a lot of distinction issues in the long run. It's one giant piece in my brain, you know, so I have that luxury on that side of things. And so I kind of forget, and I sometimes forget, you know, that this is not one, it is one giant piece, but it's not one giant book. It's 10 books making up this giant piece. And I kind of forget which book is which sometimes.
It is kind of one continuum, right? It is the Malazan Book of the Fallen.
Yes, it is.
Quite literally.
Yes, yes.
A calloused hand fell on Mappo's shoulder, offered a solid grip briefly, then withdrew as Fiddler stepped past him. Fiddler said, "The answer seems clear enough to me, Ikariam. An ascendant power. The fury of a god or goddess unleashed this devastation. How many tales have you heard of ancient empires reaching too high in their pride? Who were the seven holies to begin with? Whoever they were honored here, in this city, and no doubt its sister cities throughout Ruraku. Seven thrones. Look at the rage that assailed each of them. Looks personal to me. A god's or a goddess's hand slapped down here, Ikariam. But whoever it was has since drifted away from mortal minds. For I, at least, cannot think of any known ascendant able to unleash such power on the mortal plane as we see here." Ikariam said, "Oh, they could, but they have since learned the greater value of subtlety when interfering in the activities of mortals. The old way was too dangerous in every respect. I suspect you have answered my question, Fiddler." Fiddler shrugged. Mappo found his heart slowing. He thought, "Just do not again think of that lone surviving artifact, Ikariam." Sweat dripping in an uneven patter on the sand, Mappo shivered, drew a deep breath. He glanced back at Crocus. The lad's attention was elsewhere in such a studied pose of casual indifference that Mappo was left wondering at his state of mind. You know exactly where his mind is. How many seconds go by before he thinks of Apsalar, do you think?
Oh, dude, none. This guy's brain's always wrapped around that girl's finger, man.
Yes. It's been a while since Mappo was young, I guess, because, you know, being a young man.
Yeah. Consumed. I would think is the word here for Crocus.
Yes, that's perfect.
He's consumed with his brooding emo love right now.
Ikariam said, 94,000 years. That must be an error. He turned from the structure and offered Mappo a weak smile. The scene blurred in Mappo's eyes. He nodded and looked away to fight back a renewed surge of sorrow. Fiddler said, well, shall we resume our pursuit of Apsalar and her father? Ikariam shook himself, then murmured, aye, we are close to many things, it seems. Mappo thought, a perilous journey indeed. The night of his leave-taking all those centuries ago, in the hours when the last of his old loyalties was ritually shriven from him, Mappo had knelt before the tribe's eldest shoulder woman in the smoky confines of her yurt. He whispered, I must know more. More of these nameless ones, who would so demand this of me. Are they sworn to a god? Unable or unwilling to meet his eye, she had said, once, but no more. Cast out, cast down. In the time of the First Empire, which was not, in truth, the first, for the Talanaimas claimed that title long before, they were the left hand, another sect the right hand, both guiding, meant to be clasped. Instead, those who would come to be unnamed in their journeys into mysteries. She chopped with one hand, a gesture Mappo had not seen before among the tribe's elders. A gesture, he realized with a start, of a jag. She said, mysteries of another led them astray. They bowed to a new master. That is all there is to say. Mappo asked, who was this new master? The woman shook her head and turned away. Mappo asked, whose power resides in those staves they carry? She would not answer. In the passage of time, Mappo believed he had found the answer to that question, but it was a knowledge devoid of comfort. So there is some mystery that continues onward here.
Mm-hmm. Infuriating, not really.
Yeah. Just kidding. Do you have any idea who he suspects here?
Mm-mm. Do you have an idea?
I'm actually kind of at a loss. Thinking about it now, is it possible it has something to do with the Seven Holies?
Wow.
It's got to be something to do with the First Empire of the Seven Holies, because what else has changed to make him have some updated viewpoint on this?
You know, I would just think his the only thing about this viewpoint changing would be just his length of time he's spent.
Mm.
You know, he's we don't know how long it is, but it's presumed at least hundreds of years, if not at least a thousand.
Yeah, I think it's 900 years it's been since he went to Jerusalem, and presumably he had been with Ikariam for some time at that point.
Yeah, that's exactly. So it's been a good time that they've been together. So I think his resolve for what he's supposed to be doing is softening, because he just hates seeing his friend being so tormented. It would be hard. He's starting to identify. He's not supposed to be doing that probably. But how would you spend a millennia plus with somebody without, dude, you got to talk about something. You got to be friends. Come on.
There is a way that they talk to each other, almost like they've said everything. They don't really have conceptual conversations, it feels like. It's always, well, I guess when they did come to the underground chambers under Tessim, where they found that portal, there was some back and forth there. So I guess it depends on the experience that they're sharing at that time. But other times it just feels like they've been together so long that it's like a friend you've had for your whole life.
Yeah, I could see these guys being in the desert for a year in good company and not saying a word to each other.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they're just so comfortable by being around each other. It's just, you know, there's not a lot that needs to be said because they anticipate a lot of things from each other, you know, and that kind of partnership over the time. Mm-hmm. So I could see someone that had been that together that long, and that's a short time in this world. That's the weird thought. It's 1,200, 1,300 years, 10,000 years, please. Ikariam nuked this city 94,000 years ago. We don't even know how old this guy is. Anamander is hinted at 300, I think, has been dropped around the edges around him. So, you know, this is an old world.
Yeah.
I just had a thought. Some of this is part of Erickson's. You know how some writers go to the trouble of making a back or universe and some don't? Whether Erickson does or doesn't, I don't know, but he captures that mystique of like, man, here's what it looks like, and it's exactly what I imagine in my head. What went on here? Well, we don't really know, and we're not going to answer that question either, and I kind of like that, you know. And it's like it's kind of how life is. Not everything's neat and clean. Answers aren't always abounding.
Mm-hmm. And then you might make some assumption and it could be completely wrong.
That's true. I think I've done that several times in this series. Gee whiz, more than several times. Probably hundreds of times.
Yeah, well, I'm talking even outside the story. Oh, yeah. I heard the other day someone was telling me that, I think it was some archaeologists, they were finding signs that this civilization, they put the knives in the attic. And the men were like, oh, they're putting them up there because it's higher than everybody else in the house, and it's to worship the knives for the gods or something like that. And the women were like, they're trying to keep them out of the hands of the kids.
Right. just what mothers have been doing since the dawn of time, and knives were found.
Oh, my word. My point there is the perspective of the person that's thinking about it can have an impact on the assumptions that are being made.
You're a Monty Python fan, correct?
I haven't seen a lot of their stuff. I've seen the Holy Grail, but I think that's about it.
Like the TV show? Okay. Well, I'm all of Python. And so in particular, the television show had those wonderful Terry Gilliam animations littered throughout, especially, I'm sure it's in season one, if not the first episode. And it's one of the animations is we find this giant big, it's like they show this statue. I think it's Michelangelo's David, as a matter of fact. This toe falls off the statue. Then the dust rolls in, millennia pass, people dig it up and find this giant toe. Mm-hmm. And they haul it away to the museum, and the museum reveals like a rhinoceros with a toe for the nose, you know? So it's kind of one of those things where assumptions are usually pretty wrong. Like you just said, we honored the daggers. No, we're just keeping the knives out of the hands of kids. Common sense, man. Come on.
Yeah. They left the ancient island behind and struck out across the clay plain as the day's light slowly faded from the sky. Meppo had no idea how Apsalar and her father had fared, yet they'd managed to stay ahead day after day. He thought, this trail and its goals has not to do with Shaik. We have been led far from the places of such activity, far from where Shaik was killed, far from the oasis. Fiddler knows our destination. He has divined the knowledge from whatever secrets he holds within him. Indeed, we all suspect, though we speak nothing of it. Perhaps Crocus alone remains ignorant, but I may well be underestimating the young man. He's grown within himself. Meppo glanced across to Fiddler and thought, we go to the place you sought all along, soldier. Dusk closed in on the barren landscape, but enough light remained to reveal a chilling convergence of tracks. Soul-taken and divers by the score, the number frightening to contemplate, closing to join the twin footsteps of Apsalar and her father. Crocus fell back a dozen paces as they walked their horses. Meppo took little note of the detail until, a short while later, he whirled at a shout from Crocus. Crocus was on the ground, grappling with a man in the dusty gloom. Shadows flitted across the cracked clay. Crocus managed to pin the man down, gripping his wrists. Crocus snarled, I knew you were lurking about, you weasel, for hours and hours, since before the island. All I had to do was wait, and now I've got you. The others backtracked to where Crocus straddled Iskarl Pust, who had ceased his writhing efforts to escape. He hissed, another 1,000 paces, and the deceit is complete. Have you seen the signs of my glorious success, any of you? Are you all dimwits? Oh, so unkind in my nefarious thoughts, but see me respond to their accusations with manly silence. Ha! I have to give it to Crocus. He was able to detect a high priest of shadow lurking about. That's rather impressive.
So did I mistake his emo love phase for sniffing around for his Carl Pust? If he did, I'm so sorry, Crocus.
Maybe I'm mischaracterizing him.
Yeah, could be. I could be mischaracterizing him. I'm playing a game with some teenage romance in it, so this kind of bleeds over into this anytime I think about this, so I'm sorry.
Okay. Is it Baldur's Gate 3?
No. I'm actually replaying Final Fantasy X.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
That's got a great romance story in it. So,
man, Anima, the summon.
Dude.
Love that summon.
I haven't got it yet. I've been doing the grind. I just unlocked Ultima last night. So it's like, it's on. It's,
you get
I'm
Ultima
in the last
before,
area before I get to the ship.
Well, Anima is before that. That's like mid game. No, you get Anima, right?
No, you got to go. The last two summons are Anima and the Mega Sisters.
Okay.
I don't know why, but the grind in Final Fantasy X, and some Final Fantasies, like the grind kind of can irritate, but X is my favorite grind of all time, dude. I get like a lot of relaxation for some silly reason in that game, because I liked watching the animations, them jumping up and throwing the firebombs and all the animation and summons. It's great, man.
Yeah, I don't remember it being a drag. I mean, it was like 20-some-odd years ago I played it.
I loaned it to a friend, and I have it for every system because they've remastered it not that long ago. And so I have it for all of my systems. And so when I loaned it to a friend, it just triggered that, you know what? I haven't played that in a while either. Let's replay that. I needed something to break this, what I've been doing. I keep replaying Tears of the Kingdom.
Okay, yeah. Ikariam said to Crocus, "You might well let him up. He'll not run now." Crocus said, "Let him up? How about stringing him up?" Fiddler grinned and said, "The next tree we come to, lad, and that's a promise." Crocus released Pust, who scrambled to his feet. He crouched like a rat deciding which way to dart. He said, "Deadly proliferation. Do I dare accompany them? Do I risk the glory of witnessing with my own eyes the fullest yield of my brilliant efforts? Well disguised, this uncertainty. They know nothing." Crocus growled, "You're coming with us, no matter what happens." His hands were on the daggers at his belt. Iskarl spun to face Crocus and said, "Why, of course, lad. I was but hastening to catch up." He ducked his head, then said, "He believes me. I can see it in his face. The soft-brained dolt. Who is a match for Iskarl Pust? No one. I must remain quietly triumphant, so very quietly. The key to understanding lies in the unknown nature of warrens. Can they be torn into fragments? Oh, yes. Oh, yes, indeed. And that is the secret of Uraku. They wander more than one world, all unknowing. And before us, ah, the slumbering giant that is the heart, the true heart, not Shaik's grubby oasis. Oh, such fools abound." He paused, looked up at the others, and said, "Why do you stare so? We should be walking. 1,000 paces, no more. To your heart's desire. Hee hee." He broke into a dance, knees jerking high as he jumped in place. Crocus said, "Oh, for Hood's sake," and grasped Pust's collar, flung him stumbling forward. He said, "Let's go." Pust murmured, "The cajoling, good-humored jostling of youth. Such warm, comradely gestures. Oh, I am softened, am I not?" Mappo glanced at Ikariam and found Ikariam staring at him. Their gazes locked. Mappo thought, a fragmented warren. What on earth has happened to this land? The question was shared in silence, though. In Mappo's mind, a further thought ensued. The legends claim that Ikariam emerged from this place, strode out from Uraku, a warren torn to pieces. Uraku changes all who stride its broken soil. Gods, have we indeed come to the place where Ikariam's living nightmare was born? They continued on. Overhead, the sky's faded bronze deepened to impenetrable black. Pust's muttering dwindled as if swallowed up by the night. Mappo could see that both Fiddler and Crocus were having difficulty, though both continued walking, hands held out like blind men. 12 strides in front of the others, Ikariam halted and turned. Mappo tilted his head, acknowledging that he too had spied the two figures standing 50 paces further on, Apsalar and Servant. Ikariam strode over to take one of Crocus's outstretched hands. He said, "We have found them. They await us, it seems, before a threshold." Fiddler snapped, "Threshold? Quick Ben never mentioned anything like that. Threshold to what?" Pust hissed, "A knotted, torn piece of warren. Oh, see how the path of hands has led into it. The fools followed, one and all. The High Priest of Shadow was tasked to set a false trail. And look, oh, look how he has done so." Crocus turned to the sound of Pust's voice. He asked, "But why did her father lead us here? So that we may all be set upon and slaughtered by a horde of soul-taken and divers?" Pust said, "Servant journeys home, you withered mole carcass." The High Priest danced in place and said, "If the convergence does not kill him first, of course, hee hee, and takes her and the sapper too. And you, lad, you, ask the jag what waits within the warren. Waits like a clenched hand holding down this fragment of realm." Apsalar and her father approached side by side. Mappo had wondered at this reunion, but no expectations he'd envisioned would match the reality. Crocus had yet to notice them, and was instead drawing his daggers and preparing to close in on the sound of Pust's voice. Ikariam stood behind Crocus, a moment from disarming him. The scene was almost comic, for Crocus could see nothing, and Iskarl Pust began throwing his voice so that it emerged from 12 places at once while he continued his capering dance. Man, what a scene.
Dude, what a great scene. Pust is great. I love when he's supposed to be keeping quiet and he's telling us what's going on in his mind. What's worse, I think he does it on purpose.
I don't know about that. I think he's actually crazy.
You think so?
I do think so.
Okay.
But Crocus, his reaction to Puss is funny from the perspective that he's the only one with the brash youth and the I don't give a F attitude, where he's going to say stuff that adults probably wouldn't say out loud. Yeah. You know, and so it's just funny seeing it.
I love it, man. It's fantastic. And again, kudos to Crocus here. I've always loved his character, but I enjoy seeing that he wasn't just moping after her. He was keeping his eyeballs out for this crazy son of a gun.
I will credit him for identifying that Pusk was about. That was very impressive.
It's a very impressive feat. Pusk is a powerful character.
Fiddler, cursing under his breath, had removed a battered lantern from his pack and was now hunting for Flint. Pusk sang out, "Do you dare tread the path? Do you dare? Do you dare?" Apsalar halted before Mappo and said, "I knew you would win through." She swung her head and said, "Crocus, I am here." He whirled, sheathed his daggers, and closed. Sparks flashed and bounced from where Fiddler crouched. Mappo watched as Crocus's reaching arms were captured by Apsalar and guided around her in a tight embrace. He thought, "Oh, lad, you do not know how poignant your blindness is." An aura that was an echo of a god clung to her, yet it had become wholly her own. Mappo's sense of it did not leave him at ease. Ikariam came close to Mappo and said, "Tremorlore." Mappo said, "Aye." Ikariam said, "There are some who claim the Azath are in truth benign, a force to keep power in check, that they arise where and when there is need. My friend, I am beginning to see much truth in those claims." Mappo nodded. He thought, "This torn warren possesses such pain. If it could wander, drift, it would deliver horror and chaos. Tremorlore holds it here. Iskarl Pust speaks the truth. But even so, how Raraku has twisted on all sides." Ikariam said, "I sent Soul-Taken and divers within, closing, seeking to find the house." Mappo said, "Believing it to be a gate." The lantern glowed into light, which reached no more than a few paces in any direction. Fiddler rose from his crouch, eyes on Mappo. He said, "There is a gate there, just not the one the shapeshifters seek. Nor will they get to it. The grounds of the Azath will take them." A new voice said, "As it might all of us." They turned to see Apsalar's father standing nearby. He grated, "Now, I'd be obliged if you could bend your efforts into talking my daughter out of going any further. We can't try the gate, 'cause it's inside the house." Fiddler said, "Yet you led her here. Granted, we were looking for Tremorlore in any case, but whatever reasons you have are Iskarl Pusts, aren't they?" Mappo spoke, "Do you have a name, servant?" The old man grimaced and said, "Relok." He glanced back to Fiddler and shook his head. He said, "I can't guess the High Priest's motives. I only did what I was told. A final task for the High Priest, one to clear the debt, and I always clears my debt, even to the gods." Fiddler said, "They gave you back the arm you'd lost." Relok said, "And spared me and the life of my daughter, the day the hounds came. No one else survived, you know." Fiddler grunted, "It was their hounds, Relok." Relok said, "Even so, even so. It's the false trail, you see. The one that leads the shapeshifters astray, leads them." Ikariam nodded and said, "Away from the true gate, the one beneath Pust's temple." Relok nodded and said, "We had to finish the false trail, is all. Me and my daughter. Planting signs, leaving trails and the like. Now that's done. We hid in shadow while the shapeshifters rushed in. If I'm fated to die in bed in my village in Itkokan, then it don't matter how long's the walk." Pust sang, "Relok wants to go back to fishing, hee hee, but the place you left is not what you return to, oh no. From one day to the next, never mind years. Relok's done work, guided by the hands of gods, yet he dreams of dragging nets, with the sun on his face and lines between his toes. He is the heart of the empire. Lassine should take note, take note." Fiddler returned to his horse, drew out the crossbow and set the crank, then locked it. He said, "The rest of you can choose as you like. I've got to go in." He paused, glancing back at the horses. He said, "And we should let the beasts go." He walked over to his mount and began loosening the girth straps. He sighed, patting the Grawl gelding on the neck and said, "You've done me proud, but you'll do better out here. Lead the others, friend, to Shaik's camp." No, not the Grawl gelding.
Moment of silence.
I miss her already.
No, at least she ain't dead.
True.
But I could have done with some more horse on human violence from this Grog Ellen. At least another face biting incident or something.
What exploits that horse had. It was great.
This book has made me love some crazy horses, dude. This is one of the faves. The biter.
After a moment, the others strode to their own mounts. Ikariam turned to Mappo and said, "I too must go." Mappo closed his eyes, willing a stillness to his inner turmoil. He thought, "Gods, I am a coward. In all ways imaginable, a coward." I really wish he'd not be so hard on himself. That is a pretty negative inner dialogue to have.
Yeah, it is. I've always liked my Mappo. I've enjoyed him from the first time we met him. I like him. Heck, I love him. I just hate with the negative waves, Moriarty.
Yeah, he's putting those negative waves out. It's not good. It's being racked by guilt.
Yeah.
It's not good for anybody.
No, it's not.
Ikariam said, "Friend?" Mappo nodded. Still dancing, Pust crooned, "Oh, you will all go, seeking answers and yet more answers. But in my silent thoughts, I snigger and warn you all with words that you will not hear. Beware sleight of hand. Compared to the Azath, my immortal lords are but fumbling children." And thus the chapter ends. Mm,
great chapter.
It was very good. Yes.
Dude, heavy chapter.
Yeah, it's quite emotional. For standout moments, finding out what Ikariam is capable of when he goes into a rage, able to level cities and kill thousands of Talan Imass single-handedly.
Yeah, and that reveal that it was so long ago, that, you know, 94,000 years ago. And I just had a question that just cropped up here, especially something that Mappo said. So whatever happened here, do you think that this is Ikariam's fault? He shattered this warren, you think?
Possibly. It could be a symptom of what happened when he went into his rage.
Like maybe he was infected by the whatever, or maybe it, or something like, but yeah, he's responsible though in some way or shape, form. You think he's responsible, or was there at least when this happened? Is what I kind of, is what, if that's the impression I got from that thing that Mappo said about the
Azath pinning the fragmented warren in place.
Yeah. So, yeah, but with that.
So I think it could be one of two possibilities. Number one, Ikariam was the cause of the warren shattering. Number two, whatever caused the warren to shatter also caused Ikariam to lose his memory or something.
Yes, I guess that's what that answered my question. I felt to where these barriers came in, whatever the barrier is, it was done then. Now it might still be something else that caused these barriers, but it was that incident's the impression I got. Is that kind of what you were thinking?
Yeah.
Okay.
One of the two things, I'm not exactly sure. I know Ikariam was there and either caused it or was the recipient of it.
Yeah.
I'm leaning more towards caused it.
Yeah, that's kind of me right now too. Okay. Wow. Still. So powerful, he destroyed this place and possibly
shattered a warren.
Shattered a warren. It's yeah. Like, okay, wow.
I enjoyed Crocus sniffing out Iskarl Pust. Yes. That was quite a feat.
Yes. It's very much the feat.
And then Apsalar's reunion with Crocus, it was time. Crocus deserved to be reunited, and hopefully he's happy now.
And I, too, like that because, like I said, that's because I'm all in that playing my games got me all stoked back on that romance story again, so it's kind of funny that this is right at this time we're talking about it, too.
And then finally, finding out that Tremorlore pins a fragment of a shattered warren in place, that's a interesting concept. We've been learning a little bit more about the Azath throughout the books as they progressed, and I think this is the second time that it's been mentioned that they show up when there's a need for them to right some wrong or solve some cosmic issue that's going to potentially sunder existence.
Yeah.
All right, Billy, great job tonight.
Dude, great episode, brother.
Yeah, fantastic. That's good. You got any final thoughts before we drop off here?
Just really love the reveal about Ikariam. What we got so far, I don't know if we ever will learn much more about him, but I've always liked him. But to see that he has done this poor tortured soul has destroyed this place. I guess he's lucky he didn't destroy the continent when he went off. But it's just, wow, what a powerful fellow. I mean, I knew he's powerful, but that's just next level. That's next level. That's the guy behind the guy, behind the guy, behind the guy. Kind of, you know, that's super next level.
It kind of makes you wonder what caused him to stop in that scenario.
Yeah, because the machine, we don't want to know what the, because Mappo doesn't want him to remember what the machine is.
He doesn't want him to remember that he was the one doing the destruction and stopped.
That's
when
true.
He recognized his, oh, maybe that's what snapped him out of the rage, when he recognized his own machine.
That's kind of what I'm leaning to. Mm. But I'm also feeling, because I mean, but what's funny, I think Fiddler talking to him, I think Ikariam has sussed it out that he might have been responsible. Did you get that vibe when Fiddler said something to me? He goes, no, I think, but you may have answered a question that you weren't asking, kind of deal. But
I do think Fiddler is observant enough to see Mappo's distress and probably stepped in to try to make that situation a little bit better.
I think he did, but I think Ikariam came to realize that he may have been responsible for this, for what Fiddler said to him, because Fiddler was obviously trying to mislead him into thinking some god or ascendant, but Ikariam's like, I think you've answered that probably better than you meant to.
I don't think Ikariam took that he did it from him.
Oh, okay. Very cool. Okay.
But I'm not the authority on it, so no, it could be either one of them. Yeah.
Hey, you're the only other authority I know personally, sir.
Unless somebody writes us to correct us.
Yes. Hey, please feel free. Hey, contact at horsefrogproductions.com, please. Yeah. And be nice, though. Please be kind. We are nice guys, so.
All right. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next week.
See y'all next week.
We're live.
Hello, everyone. I'm Billy. Don't keep me in suspense, bro. You're killing me.
You want to start over?
Okay. Keep me in suspense. Okay. Here we go. Hello, everyone. Okay, let's do it again.
I'll adjust it in additions. I want it to be legitimate.
Okay. You can keep that in, too, I guess. Hello, everyone. I'm Billy.
And I'm Kamran. Welcome to the Horse Frog Podcast, home of your two favorite professional digressors and the creators of the Malazan Brotherhood.
Today, this is going to be tough intro. Today, we will be discussing Book 4, Chapter 5 of Deadhouse Gates, a novel
chapter
of the Malazan 15. Books.
Hold on. You said Chapter 5.
Oh my gosh. Okay, let's try that again. Okay. I thought we were professional, sir. Not today. Today, we'll be discussing Book 4, Chapter 15 of Deadhouse Gates, a novel in the Malazan Books of the Fallen. This is part 3 of our coverage of this chapter.
This podcast series is intended to be a companion to reading or listening to the...
That's awful. I'm so sorry. I've infected us.
Oh, man. This podcast series is intended to be... I can't do it. Oh, my God. I got. Okay. We got to get this under control so we can deal with it. All right.
Okay. Hold on. Okay. I think I'm okay. Are you?
No. All
right. I'm okay, but I'm on the edge. Right, it's right there right, waiting. Right.
Yeah. I mean, this podcast series is intended to be a companion to reading or listening to the books. I'm sorry. Oh, my God. I'm like, all right. For real, I got to get this. Okay. This podcast series is intended to be a companion to reading or listening to the book set in the Malazan universe. It's not a book review, and it is most definitely not intended to be a replacement to reading the books. Both Billy and I know this to be the best fantasy story ever written and want to share our love of the series with you.
Did I shake you up at the testify instead of preach? So sorry. I thought I'd shake it up a wee bit for us this time.
Okay.
We will be covering the books. Good gracious. We will be covering the events of the books in a linear fashion. There will be spoilers for those that have not read the books. We'll try not to spoil anything prior to us covering that portion of that respective book, but that ship's already sailed. I dropped a minor spoiler, not like accidentally revealing who shot JR, just kind of a minor spoiler. Just minorly, sorry. So do we need an OSHA-type signage in Horse Frog Towers? Like X amount of days without incident for like me in particular?
We need it has been X number of episodes since Billy has had to be censored due to.
Okay,
and today we are at zero because I had to beep you last week.
Oh, did you beep you? Okay, right on.
No, I had to beep you.
Oh, yeah. Oh, what was last week's? Okay, that's right. Oh, yeah.
Said a name drop. Yes, that's correct.
I remember what you said. Okay. Yeah.
A quick warning. Today's episode contains descriptions of past violence. Listener discretion is advised.
Our show is listener supported, and if you'd like to support us, we would really appreciate that. You can do so by visiting our Patreon link on our website at horsefrogproductions.com. Currently, we are posting ad-free episodes on Patreon weekly.
Also, we'd really like to hear from you. Send any feedback or comments to contact@horsefrogproductions.com. All right, a couple of things to address before we get into the episode today.
Okay.
It took Billy and I about 5 tries to get through this episode intro because I thought immediately right when we started recording that it would be a good idea to mention that I hadn't watched Broken Arrow, but I didn't say Broken Arrow. I just said I hadn't watched a movie. And then Billy's like, wait, we were supposed to watch something. And then I said, just save it for when we're recording. And then we couldn't stop laughing for 5 tries at this intro. So neither one of us have watched Broken Arrow. I know we talked about it last week. We're going to try to rewatch it and see if it still stood up. And then also how the rope-a-dope was presented. We thank you all for joining us today.
Again, we'd really like to thank you for taking the time to be with us, and we've had a really great time talking about the topic today.
If you would like to support our show, you can find us at horsefrogproductions.com, where you can find our Patreon link. Depending on the platform you're listening from, it may also be in the episode description.
And if you'd like to contact us through email, it's at contact@horsefrogproductions.com.